You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The blood washed away, but the guilt never does. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
The trial against Richard Allen, we're coming very close to a close by the time you are watching this, and may already be done. That's where we're at right now as of our recording. We're going to discuss kind of where this trial went from start to finish in its last days as they determine whether or not there's enough reasonable doubt to either convict or not convict Richard Allen of being the murderer in Delphi, Indiana. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us to discuss last handful of days. We've had some very interesting testimony as the defense has had their chance. They rested after only just a few days, bringing in a lot of the experts, a lot of almost duplicate type experts to what the prosecution brought in, but from their perspective and seemingly with a little more credibility. What's been your take on what we've seen at the end of this trial?
I am so pleased at the quality of the experts the defense has brought in, you know, and I have tried to keep a very open mind on this case. It's been a weird case, but I've said for a long time, one of the most core factors, certainly in looking at guilt or innocence of Richard Allen for me, has been the timeline of when his psychotic symptoms started and how that aligns with the confessions, the 60 plus confessions. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I got answers to that. I took pages and pages of notes that now it's been broken down. And what I have learned is that we had a man who entered the prison that he's in with no psychotic symptoms. Mm-hmm. Now, he did have a diagnosis that he had had since childhood of major depressive disorder, which some people with major depression can become psychotic. Mm-hmm. And certainly under stress, they're more prone to it than other people. And we also know that people who are psychotic may very well confess to things that they didn't do. And so when we're looking at, is this a legit confession or is this a false hallucination, delusion confession, we have to know, were they psychotic when they started making the confessions? So we know that the first 4 months, according to Dr. Walla, who was the prison psychologist, Richard Allen was not psychotic. And then after 4 months, he had a religious conversion that happened very quickly. He began sleeping with his Bible and talking about wanting to be forgiven. And it happened like that. Mm-hmm. I think this was in, I believe it was in March. Yes, March 23. That was the beginning of the psychosis for him. And we often see these kind of almost bizarre, rapid-fire religious conversions. That can be an early sign of psychosis. And again, not saying that all religious people are psychotic.
Sure, yeah.
But when it happens like this, that's a red flag to me. Now, Dr. Walla, I have a lot of concerns about her at this point, based upon all the things that we've heard. She consistently maintained that when he started with some of the bizarre behavior, he was malingering, which means feigning symptoms for some kind of benefit. Mm-hmm. I think she was wrong. And clearly, over the course of the few weeks after that religious conversion, he became increasingly psychotic. The eating feces, you know, the naked, the masturbating while singing. I mean, just the bizarre behavior. I don't think people eat feces when they're feigning psychosis. I just, I can't go there. Now, I think there's bias within the prison system toward believing people are malingering because they do see a lot of it. It does happen a lot. But I think that can create a biased perception. And I am fairly certain, I'll stick my neck out and say that Dr. Walla was biased. This is also the psychologist who was inundated, you know, with her true crime material. And we know a lot of the stuff online has been painting him as guilty, 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 you know, for a long time now, ever since he was targeted as a suspect.
Yeah.
So I think we had very poor treatment with Dr. Walla. There was no testing done. We can do psych testing that looks for malingering. That was never done. I don't see any excuse for that. I mean, to me, that's, you know, malpractice. Eventually, Dr. Walla did call in her supervisor and another clinical person to look, take a look at him. And that's when they decided, okay, he is psychotic, and let's start some Haldol. They gave him an injection of Haldol. Was that the right medication? You know, not everybody responds to Haldol. It's an older medication. It's cheap. It was worth a try. I don't know that it helped. It may have helped a bit, but he did start to improve over time after he had had another dose and doses after that. So I think there was no question he was psychotic. I think he was psychotic before Dr. Walla understood what was happening. And I think maybe at that point she had difficulty backtracking. So that's why she called in some other people to take a look. And then we had testimony from, it was Dr. Westcott, who's a neuropsychologist, excellent credentials. And she did testing. She spent hours and hours with him, looked over all the records, and ended up with a 127-page report on this. And I think she did excellent work. It was well documented that he was psychotic. He had been psychotic for the, you know, after the first 4 months of solitary confinement. He did have major depressive disorder in addition to the psychotic. He was anxious, and that he was definitely not malingering and hadn't been malingering. Mm-hmm. So to me, this really tips the scale that these confessions are not credible.
Why do you think it is that Dr. Walla didn't, you know, do her due diligence on that until, like, after a while, calling other people in? I mean, you, like you said, it's malpractice at a certain point where it's like, why? I mean, if she wants to do certain tests, can she do them? Does she need a court approval? Does she need investigative approval or something to do that with the client? Or is that up to the doctor at that?
I am guessing that it was within her discretion to choose to do it or not do it. And it makes no sense to me because I always will look back on, you know, somebody's unusual symptoms. And if I don't understand what's going on, immediately you get another set of eyes on the person, you get some more opinions. And if you can have testing done that's going to give diagnostic clarification, that's the ethical thing that you do. And you fight for that. So this is... I think a case of malpractice, you know, with the treatment he received in prison. She was seeing him for a long period of time. She was seeing him daily.
Yeah.
But I have real concerns about her possible bias that she had already decided he was guilty and therefore was looking through a lens and a filter that only she only saw what she wanted to believe.
It's scary.
Which is horrible.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you for joining us. Now, as this trial barrels towards its conclusion, one thing is abundantly clear. The case against Richard Allen has left a trail of unanswered questions and ethical concerns. From the shaky confessions extracted during what experts describe as a psychotic break to forensic evidence that's been relentlessly picked apart, this isn't just a test of Allen's innocence or guilt. It's a litmus test for the justice system in Delphi. What started as a straightforward quest for justice has spiraled into a tangled web of missteps, bias, procedural failures. I could haunt this case long after the verdict is read. The defense's strategy in these final days has been nothing short of methodical, aimed squarely at dismantling the prosecution's narrative piece by piece. They've brought in top-tier experts to challenge everything from the timeline of the murders to the forensic methods used to link Allen to the crime scene. Perhaps the most explosive revelation came from the digital forensic expert who testified about Libby German's phone. According to her, a headphone jack was plugged into the device hours after the girls were last seen. That singular detail, it shakes the foundation of the prosecution's timeline, suggesting either the girls were alive longer than previously believed, or, more disturbingly, that someone else was involved in their deaths. And yet the prosecution has offered no plausible explanation for this anomaly, leaving jurors to connect the dots themselves. Then there's the matter of Richard Allen's confessions, more than 60 of them, given while he was held in solitary confinement. The prosecution has learned and leaned very heavily on these confessions, but the defense argues they're anything but reliable. Psychiatric experts have testified that Allen was in the midst of a severe psychotic breakdown, triggered by over a year in isolation. His behavior during this time was described as textbook psychosis. Textbook. Eating feces, stripping naked, bizarre religious delusions. These aren't the actions of a rational mind, let alone one capable of making credible admissions of guilt. Yet despite clear signs of mental deterioration, the prison psychologist repeatedly dismissed Allen's symptoms as malingering. A damning oversight that could amount to maybe even malpractice. It's not just the psychological evidence under scrutiny. The forensic evidence, once touted as the cornerstone of the prosecution's case, has come under fire as well. A key piece of this puzzle is the unspent cartridge found near the girls' bodies, which the state claims matches Allen's firearm. But the defense's firearms expert dismantled this claim, arguing that the methodology used to make the match was fundamentally flawed. According to him, comparing markings on fired versus unfired cartridges is like comparing apples to oranges. Without this physical link, the prosecution's case becomes even more precarious, relying heavily on circumstantial evidence and those disputed confessions. What's striking is how the prosecution seems so confident heading into the trial, as if they believe their evidence would be enough to silence any doubts. Instead, the defense has turned the spotlight on the glaring inconsistencies and procedural failures that have plagued the investigation from the very start. Questions about law enforcement's handling of the case, potential biases, and even the competency of their forensic analysis room, very large. At times, it feels like a criminal trial. Or less like a criminal trial, I should say, and more like an expose on how not to conduct an investigation. If Richard Allen is acquitted, it will raise serious questions about how the system allowed an innocent man to be accused and nearly convicted based on such fragile evidence. But even if he is convicted, the specter of reasonable doubt will linger, casting a shadow over the entire process. And for the families of Abby Williams and Libby German, the conclusion of this trial may bring a verdict, but it's unlikely to bring closure. The community of Delphi will be left gripping and trying to figure out, with the unsettling possibility that justice in this case may never truly be served. In the end, this trial isn't just about Richard Allen. It's about the justice system that's failed to rise to the occasion when it mattered most. The stakes couldn't be any higher. And as the jury prepares to deliberate, they carry the weight of their decision that will echo far beyond the walls of the courtroom, whether Allen walks free or spends the rest of his life behind bars. The question remains, did the system do its job or did it fail everyone involved? I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll keep following this case for you. Thanks for listening. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any updates on our reporting. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're neck deep in a dark, twisted tale. And just as the tension peaks, bam, a commercial about some miracle diet pill breaks the spell. It's like finding a fly in your soup after the first bite. But here's the fix. True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. You get to enjoy your crime stories without the junk, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that go beyond the surface, and early access to all the gruesome details. It's like swapping out a can of cheap beer for a glass of fine whiskey. So search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and keep the darkness flowing uninterrupted.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.